It is late night right here, Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here, 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And again, you know, after last night, spending close to 4 hours questioning Brad Stevens, and really for the first time in a long time, and that's what you guys wanted to do last night. So many questions about Brad Stevens, and I really feel like it's okay once in a while to question this guy. He's nothing but a basketball genius. We all sort of acknowledge that. We all realize that he has been the best thing that's happened to the Boston Celtics in the last 5 years, and that includes drafting guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Without Brad Stevens, this team is not where they are. But he's not infallible, and right now, this year, I feel like he's got the hardest job in the NBA, continuing to try to win games for this team to live up to the expectations that are so lofty for this team. And it's the first time in Brad's tenure here where the Boston Celtics enter a season with legitimate expectations put upon their shoulders. No longer can this team sort of creep up on the competition. No longer can they be sort of lovable underdogs that outwork, outgrind, and out-hustle their opponents. The target is squarely on the Celtics' back this year, and through the first 11 games of the season, you know, it's been up and down, to say the least, and here to help talk us off the ledge some more is Chris Mannix. You guys know him from NBC Sports Boston, and now he's back to where he used to be, Sports Illustrated. Chris, thanks for staying up late with us here tonight.
You got it, man. No problem.
So Chris, real quick, I mean, you know, Celtics 7-4, the record is one thing. It is what it is, but for me, and I think for a lot of Celtics fans in general, it's not so much the record, but it's the way in which this team has got to that record. It's been up and down, to say the least. You know, on one hand, there's still a great defensive team. On the other hand, as you pointed out in your column that you wrote yesterday, they're at the bottom of the pack, really sharing this space with some pretty bad basketball teams when it comes to how bad offensively they've been. In your estimation, through the first 11 games, why are they so bad offensively with all this great offensive talent?
Well, I think there's probably more than one reason. And look, it is, on some level, a little perplexing as to why they're so inconsistent. I mean, you know, the standard argument is you're trying to incorporate two new players that have the ball in their hands a lot, and Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, when the reality is this team was, what, 16-1 to start the season ago with the exact same group minus Gordon Hayward. I mean, is Gordon Hayward that big an adjustment? But all that being said, I mean, it is still, I think there are still guys trying to figure out their roles. You know, Jason Tatum was a top option a year ago. He's not that guy anymore. Jaylen Brown trying to find his way. Certainly Terry Rozier. So there's a lot of kind of searching out there on the floor. Searching, I think, that will eventually lead to a quality, you know, high-level offensive team. They just haven't quite figured out that chemistry yet.
So, in speaking of that chemistry, is there a scenario that you can foresee here where if this thing keeps up for, say, another 7, 8, 9, 10 games where it quite frankly isn't working? We keep seeing the same sort of box score from these guys. Gordon Hayward, he got 8 shots up tonight. He had 7 shots up in the previous game against the Nuggets. Jason Tatum consistently taking fewer than 10 shots a night. Al Horford, we know he's not going to take any more than 10. He took 7 tonight. But for me anyways, sort of observing from afar, I think to myself, you're never going to get the best out of Gordon Hayward taking 8 shots a night. 25-minute restriction or not, it's just simply not enough, especially for a guy that needs to shoot the ball to sort of get his rhythm back and become the guy that we expect him to be. And Jason Tatum, we know what he can be offensively. 7 shots tonight, and that's been a bit of a troubling trend for him, not getting double-digit shot attempts. I know that these guys have to share the basketball more than they did last year. But is there a scenario in which you foresee maybe Gordon Hayward going to the bench, if only for a couple of weeks, to get 10, 12, 15 shots and become the offensive leader of the second unit?
I don't know if we'll see Hayward go to the bench, because as much as his offense is meaningful and, you know, he's going to come on a little more offensively when he gets his legs back and you know, plays 20, 30, 40 games into this season, they need his playmaking, I think, far more than the shot making. I mean, with that first unit, you got a whole bunch of guys that can make shots. I mean, Hayward is out there as one of the better passers with that group, and he and Al Horford are effectively in the half court, the point guards, because they're probably the two best passers with that unit. So I think they need him to become an even better passer with that group. That's not to say that I don't think a lineup change could be in the offing. I mean, when I had Brad Stevens on my podcast this summer, you know, we talked a little bit about the need for him to have a difficult conversation with somebody about being a sixth man. It never really materialized. I mean, Aaron Baines is not a difficult conversation being a sixth man. Terry Rozier knew he was going to be a sixth man. I went into this season believing that somebody in that, you know, three-man wing group of Hayward, Tatum, and Brown was going to be coming off the bench. I think that could still materialize, and it may come down to Tatum and Jalen Brown, because, you know, this is a team that I don't think needs to be playing as small and offensive-oriented to start games. I think being more balanced with a high-level defensive center in Aaron Baines, I mean, their defense is not going to skip a beat with Aaron Baines in the lineup, coupled with a guy like Brown or Tatum going to that second unit and beefing up a group that is only averaging like 35 points a game, which puts that bench in the bottom third of the NBA. I think that's something that we could see, you know, happen down the line. I don't believe it'll be Gordon Hayward. Too much history with Brad Stevens and the passing is too important. But Brown or Tatum, could I see them making a move to the bench? I could.
It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Joining me on the phone right now from Sports Illustrated, from NBC Sports Boston, it's Chris Mannix. And Chris, you know, you talk about these guys and you talk about this team in general. And again, at 7-4, a quality win tonight against a bad Phoenix Suns team. And that sort of seems like an oxymoron. But you've been covering this sport for a very long time. I think a year longer than I have. And I've been doing it for 19 years. So, you know, a game like this, I don't care who the opponent is. The way they came out, as ugly as it was in the first quarter, as ugly as it was in the first half. I mean, in my opinion, this is the type of win that could potentially galvanize this team a bit. In your opinion, after watching nearly 20 years of basketball, doing this as long as you have, does the opponent matter in a game like this where you have this sort of comeback? I mean, down 12 with 4 minutes to go and they find a way.
I mean, I think the opponent does matter to a degree. I mean, the Suns, you almost have to try to lose to on most nights. I mean, they're starting a point guard in Isaiah Kanan, who's played exactly 20 NBA games in the last 3 years. You know, so you know, they're not built to win anything. You know, Devin Booker has potential, but to me, he's still just a scorer. And DeAndre Ayton, as we saw tonight and have seen all season, he's a long way from a finished product. So I think there's probably a sense of relief in that Celtic locker room, but I don't think there's a sense that they found something. I think it's still very much a work in progress. And, you know, it's going to be a tough night for them, you know, tomorrow night when they go into Utah without Kyrie Irving, probably. And, you know, with Gordon Hayward, you know, going through some emotional stuff on his return to Utah. So, I don't know. I mean, the opponent matters in the sense that I don't think it's a real, like, wow, we found exactly what works tonight. I think it's just, thank God, we got out of Phoenix with a win.
So, Kyrie Irving reportedly will not be in Utah. He's got a family memorial to go to. You mentioned Gordon Hayward, though. Gordon Hayward, I thought it was my understanding that minutes restriction at about 25 minutes and he's not playing back-to-backs. Do you think he's going to play tomorrow in Utah?
Oh, he's going to play.
You think so?
Yeah, there's nothing that's going to keep Gordon Hayward out of this game. I don't think he has like an axe to grind with Utah or anything like that, but you know, you can't come back to Utah for the second year in a row and not play. That's just weird. So I think he's going to play and play under the same minutes restriction he has all season.
Oh, so we spent the first 10 minutes of this conversation really picking apart the negative things that we've seen from the Celtics in their first 11 games. Chris, what have you seen that you've liked from the Celtics through their first 11 games? What are the building blocks that you've seen that this team can sort of build that championship contender on?
You know, I love what Marcus Morris has done, you know, coming into this season. I mean, he was a guy that at the end of last year really wasn't sure what his future was with the team. And as someone that also has a contract coming up at the end of the year, he could have been difficult. He could have, you know, been a little bit bitter about what his role was going to be, but he's embraced it and made the most of it. And one thing we've learned this season is that Marcus Morris, you know, outside of Kyrie Irving, maybe the most comfortable player on the Celtics taking that last second shot. He's made a couple of huge ones this season, including the one that we saw tonight. So offensively, or at least off the bench, Marcus Morris is there. Look, they still are an elite defensive team. I mean, I don't know what their ranking is going to be after tonight, giving up as many points as they did. But they're still going to be 1, 2, or 3 in the league in defensive efficiency at the end of the year. And they just have the horses to be a high-level defensive team. Marcus Smart has been great to start the season, but he's still an elite defensive guy. You've got Baines, who I mentioned, who's an elite defensive big man. I mean, they're going to be able to get stops against teams down the stretch. That's why you only need their offense to come around, you know, a little bit more. They don't have to be, I think, a top 10 offensive team to be a finals team. You just got to be out of the bottom third to be a finals team.
Yeah, last year I think they were, what, 17th, 18th, something like that in the league. So essentially, you know, I don't know, 50%, as good as 50% of the league. That's what you're looking for here. If they can be somewhere 15 to 18, I would be satisfied with where they are offensively. But being a bottom feeder, I don't think is going to get it done. And Chris, you know, everybody knows that you cover the Celtics here and you have for years, but you also do the whole league. So real quick, before you get out of here, how surprised are you at what you're seeing from Derrick Rose this year?
Surprised. I mean, nobody expected him to go for 50 there. I mean, like, that's part of your surprise. But if you watch the end of last year, it seemed like he rediscovered something in the playoffs. I mean, it was just small sample size, but it seemed like he rediscovered something. And Derrick Rose is still a relatively young guy. I think he's, only 30 years old. And he's playing for a coach that has unflinching faith in him. I mean, Tom Thibodeau would go to the mat for Derrick Rose. And when you have that kind of coach with that kind of confidence, which frankly is not something Derrick Rose has had since he left Tom Thibodeau in Chicago, I think at least it creates an environment where you can succeed on the floor.
And then final question for me, LeBron James, having a typical LeBron year with the Lakers. The Lakers have been up and down. They've got expectations out there in Los Angeles, but not nearly quite as lofty this year as they are in Boston. But what have you seen out of LeBron and that Lakers team? And in my opinion, I think that Lakers team is going to surprise some teams this year. I feel like they're going to get better as the year moves along. Is LeBron a good fit out there, and is that thing going to wind up working out?
No, I mean, he's a good fit with L.A. for whatever L.A. becomes in the next couple of years. I mean, that team is going to evolve significantly as they try to chase big-name free agents. As far as this year goes, look, they're going to get better because LeBron changes gears every month that goes by in the NBA season. And, you know, they're going to get their chemistry better because they don't really have any of it right now. I'm still skeptical about them being a playoff team because in the NBA, you have to make three-pointers, and they don't. You've got to defend, and they don't. And the Western Conference is tough. If they get into the playoffs, you have to tell me who falls out. Is it New Orleans? Maybe I buy that. But, you know, you've also got Denver that's going to take the step up and take one of those playoff spots. Is it San Antonio? I don't know. Somebody else is going to have to fall out because Denver's getting into the playoffs this year. Somebody else has to fall out for the Lakers to get in.
All right, he's Chris Mannix. He's from Sports Illustrated, from NBC Sports Boston. Chris, thanks for staying up so late with us tonight. I appreciate it.
You got it, Patrick.
All right, there he goes, Chris Mannix. You guys could read his stuff right now on Sports Illustrated, sportsillustrated.com, and then check out the replay of what he did tonight on NBC Sports Boston. I'm sure he'll be back in the studio again tomorrow night as the Celtics are on the road heading into Utah, and Chris brought it up there. I was going to bring it up in the next segment. Don't panic. You won't see Kyrie Irving tomorrow night. It's a scheduled day off. So Chris sort of dropped it in the conversation and said he didn't think Kyrie was going to be there. He didn't specify why, but he's going to be out for family reasons. He's got a family memorial to go to. So he didn't tweak a hamstring tonight. His knee's not bothering him. He's just got a scheduled day away from the team. But the way that Kyrie Irving is playing, this MVP caliber level that he's played at through the last five games, he single-handedly sort of won the Celtics the game tonight. We're going to find out how much this game mattered tonight. We're going to find out exactly where this Celtics team is outside of Kyrie Irving tomorrow night because they're going into Utah. It will be an emotionally charged environment. You heard Chris Mannix say right there that he believes that Gordon Hayward is going to play in Utah tomorrow night despite the fact that it is a back-to-back situation, and we were told that he was going to be held out of back-to-backs. So assuming Gordon Hayward plays, it's going to be an emotionally charged atmosphere. Gordon Hayward's second, really, opportunity to return, but last year he was hurt. So first time back in Utah after seven outstanding years with the Jazz. That fan base loves him. It is going to be an electric atmosphere tomorrow night. Emotionally charged atmosphere tomorrow night for this Celtics team. We will see if removing one of the primary offensive cogs from that starting lineup actually does, in fact, open up more offense for guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Al Horford, like we've discussed so much here. So thanks again to Chris Mannix for joining us here. Find his stuff online at Sports Illustrated and find him at NBC Sports Boston. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls at 617-779-7937. It is late night right here, Sports Radio WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join me here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I should have got into this with Chris Mannix, but I did not. There was just too many other things to really talk about, and I feel like we've talked quite a bit about this, but the story did change a little bit today, and I wouldn't be doing my job if we didn't talk about this. So we talked quite a bit last night about Terry Rozier and the reports that started with Bill Simmons, who's not really, you know, a reporter anymore. He's much more of a sports personality than he is a reporter. But anyways, the reports came out yesterday. Bill Simmons really got the ball rolling, talking about Terry Rozier being unhappy in Boston, unhappy with his production, unhappy with his minutes, unhappy with his role in general, averaging about 22 minutes and about 7 points per game. If he truly is unhappy, I don't blame him. I always thought it was a little bit strange that he was openly so willing to accept that reduced role this year. Like, typically when a superstar comes back, you hear the lesser player, you hear the backup player that took over for that superstar say things along the lines of, you know, I'm going to compete, I want my job, that, you know, whatever it may be. And Terry Rozier never really spoke out like that. He said that he was going to be okay with the role in which he was given here with the Celtics. And to his credit, when he's played, he's come in and tried to be the guy that he was last year pre-Kyrie injury. The problem is we all saw what he can do. We all saw what he's capable of when he's given sort of, he's unfettered out there, and he's able to not look over his shoulder. He knows he's not coming out of the game. He knows he's guaranteed to play 35 to 40 minutes a night, be able to jack up 15 to 20 shots a night, and nobody's going to think twice about it because he didn't have to share that offensive load with anybody last year. Let's face it, he wasn't sharing it all that much with Marcus Smart, and he's just not going to be somebody that worries that much about getting somebody else's shot. He's not so much a playmaker as he is somebody that creates for himself. Is he a capable playmaker? Sure. But that's not his role out there. His role is to be instant offense off the bench. His role is to come in and change the pace of the basketball game. And this year, he's been all right at that role. This year, he's been okay. But he hasn't had that same electric offense that he brought last year. And again, we talked with Chris Mannix about this, about these guys getting used to their new roles. He got comfortable with his role last year. This is the guy that thrived as the starting point guard for a team that went to Game 7 of the conference finals, for God's sakes. I mean, to do that for the extended amount of time that he did it for. We're not talking about a two-week stretch. We're not talking about a one-month stretch. We're talking about a prolonged stretch of excellent play. So who could blame him if he truly was unhappy? Who could really blame him if he potentially wanted to go showcase his skills somewhere else as he's about to enter restricted free agency? I mean, he knows his value out there in the market. He knows he's got an agent telling him that there would be teams willing to sign him to $15 to $20 million a year. He could be featured as a primary backcourt member. I'm not going to say primary point guard because the NBA really isn't about these defined roles any longer. The days of being a defined one, defined two, defined three, defined four, defined five really don't exist the way that they used to. I mean, he is simply a guard. He's a guard that's capable of playing both guard positions, and he's a guard that's worthy of 35 to 40 minutes a night in the NBA. He knows it. We know it. He knows that the coach knows it. He knows that Danny Ainge knows it, right? But I always thought it was funny that it was Bill Simmons that sort of unearthed this scoop, so to speak, because not only did Bill Simmons say that Rozier was unhappy, he said that there were seven or eight teams eagerly sort of watching this situation, waiting to pounce. Now, we've heard of one team that's very interested in Rozier, and that's been the Phoenix Suns, but that's an old story. They've been interested in Rozier since the offseason. That's nothing new, and they're going to maintain that interest in Rozier because he fits what they're doing. You know, he is a young, dynamic player with a high upside, which is exactly what the Suns are looking for. They're looking to be very bad this year, but grow their young talent, grow that talent depth, grow the assets the way that Danny Ainge did here. You know, if you're the Phoenix Suns and you trade for a Terry Rozier, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're holding on to him for the long term. You know, there could be a possibility that you trade for him. He plays 40 minutes a night, averages 22 points a game for a very bad basketball team. He's an asset who's been built up, and then you flip him for somebody else. I mean, let's not forget, you know, you got a situation here where Danny Ainge turned a bag of balls and Marcus Thornton into Isaiah Thomas. Then he flipped Isaiah Thomas. Despite the fact that IT was damaged goods, he still flipped him for Kyrie Irving. So you can see how these things can snowball, and one small trade can become a transformative player if you have patience and if you groom your players the right way. And Danny Ainge was the master. He still is the master at collecting assets and turning those assets, making them more valuable, and then flipping them off again and getting back the ultimate piece that you're looking for. So again, I wouldn't be shocked if Terry Rozier were the first player traded off this Celtics team. But today, Danny Ainge, both in radio and in print, he came out and he vehemently denied this story. And he said that he's got an open line of communication with Terry Rozier. And he said that he and Terry talk all the time. They've talked about the good and the bad. And Danny believes that if Rozier really said these things, that he would have said them to Danny Ainge first. He doesn't believe that Rozier's unhappy, because each and every time those two have communicated, it's Danny's belief that Rozier's okay with his role. You know, would he like more minutes? Sure. Would he like additional shot opportunities? Of course. But is he going to be the guy that blows this thing up? Is he going to be the guy that sort of shakes up the feel-good chemistry that this team is trying to have around here? Let's not forget, this is the same team that Kyrie Irving felt the need to openly announce that he was going to stick around here and sign a max contract, because he didn't want the distraction of his impending free agency following this team around the entire season into every visiting team's arena that the Celtics would visit 41 times. That's 41 different groups of media members asking Kyrie Irving the same damn question. What are you going to do next year in free agency? So by shutting that down, what did Kyrie do? It was actually a very intelligent thing. He took that distraction virtually off the table, because Kyrie's been there before. Kyrie has won an NBA championship before. Kyrie has been to multiple NBA finals. He knows what it takes to actually win the whole thing. And he knows that with a team like this especially, you want to keep the distractions to a minimum. So I would be very, very, very surprised if Terry Rozier, who looks up to a guy like Kyrie Irving, I would be very surprised if he actually openly demands a trade. Through back channels, are his people suggesting that he would like to go somewhere else? I'm sure. But guys do that all the time in the NBA. Like, this is nothing new. As long as he doesn't publicly come out and say, I'm not happy here, I don't like my role, I don't want to be here, as long as that doesn't happen, I feel like there is some truth in what Bill Simmons said. I'm not sure where he got the scoop from, but I promise you this, the way that you read it, I don't think it came from Rozier. I think it came from maybe Rozier's people. It came from people that are listening to Rozier's people, because that's how these things happen, especially this early on in the NBA season, right? They put feelers out there, and Terry Rozier and his people know that there'll be a handful of teams that really aren't going anywhere this year, but those handful of teams would be looking for dynamic young talent on the cheap. And that's exactly what Rozier is. And Rozier knows that if he can go somewhere right now and enter free agency coming off another year where he plays 40 minutes a night, averages 18 to 22 points, he knows he's going to get paid. He knows that he's going to have an opportunity to make significant dollars next year. But what happens to that value if he plays here? Let's say the Celtics go back to the conference finals. Hell, let's say the Celtics go to the NBA finals. I don't care if they win or lose in this scenario. Let's say they get to the NBA Finals, and ultimately at the end of the year, Terry Rozier averaged 20 minutes a night and 7 points a game, about what he's doing right now. What does that do to his value as an impending restricted free agent? It kills it. He knows that. He knows he's got an opportunity to get paid, and the best part for Rozier is he proved it not only to himself but to the rest of the league that he is a capable NBA scorer. Is he somebody that's capable of being a starting backcourt member on a championship team? I don't think so. So for all the people out there last year, and there were a bunch of you, don't hide under the covers now, okay? There were a bunch of you that said, Kyrie who? Why do we need Kyrie Irving? And I feel like that take got exposed big time in Game 7 against the Cavs, when Rozier went 0 for 10 on the biggest stage that he had ever performed on from three. And meanwhile, you desperately needed Kyrie Irving. You desperately needed Gordon Hayward, guys that are not only capable of hitting big shots in big moments, but more importantly, guys that are capable of creating for themselves, getting to the free throw line, and stopping the opposition's momentum. Because what happened last year, after that Tatum dunk and then steal, Tatum 3, Celtics take the 1-point lead with 5 minutes to go, and they don't score again. Meanwhile, LeBron put his foot on the throat of the Celtics. That's what happened. And the Celtics didn't have anybody capable of getting to the free throw line, stopping that momentum that Cleveland was picking up with LeBron James. Not even Terry Rozier was able to do that, despite the fact that that was the tail end of the scary Terry era here in Boston. So while he's a gifted offensive player, while he's a dynamic offensive player, I feel like the Celtics have settled in right now to Marcus Morris being that guy off the bench. And he's done an outstanding job, by the way. Marcus Morris, an impending unrestricted free agent. He is earning more money each and every day. What's happened to his value as Rozier's has gone down, Marcus Morris's has gone up. He is going to make bank if he continues this. Now, the issue with Marcus Morris is, historically, he will go down with an injury at some point here. And historically, he will blow his cool at some point here. And he won't be this consistent for the majority of the season. That's what history tells us about Marcus Morris. But right now, 11 games into the season, going into the year, if you would ask me who was going to be the Celtics' primary scorer offensively off the bench, I would have said without a shadow of a doubt that that role belongs to Terry Rozier, especially after what we saw for that prolonged 2-3 month stretch last year, right? But that has, in fact, not been the case to start this season. Marcus Morris, he hits the critical three tonight. I believe it's the second time this season he's been put in that situation, and he's come through for the Celtics, so he's been a clutch player as well. So I believe he scored 17 points tonight, and he scored the most critical 3 points of the game. Not only that, what does it say that Brad Stevens continues to draw up plays for Marcus Morris? He knows he's got that clutch gene a little bit, doesn't he? I mean, it looked like a play that was going to be designed for Kyrie Irving, who had been outstanding shooting from three. But it wasn't. It was a bit of a trick play. He knew that Kyrie was going to be double-teamed, somebody was going to be open, and you pop Marcus Morris out to the top of the key for three, gets him a wide-open look, Celtics force overtime, Celtics win. But I feel like Marcus Morris has taken that role away from Terry Rozier, right? Terry, I feel like, would have been a little bit more comfortable in that Marcus Morris role where he comes off the bench and he's the primary offensive option off the bench. That just hasn't been the case. Not this year. So at some point here, I feel like the Rozier situation will come to a head. If you had to ask me right now, I don't think he finishes the year with the Celtics. But I predicted that back in September. Like, it can't work for the entirety of the season. But right now, I said it back then, and I'll say it again. I wouldn't trade Rozier at all right now. I need to see more from Kyrie Irving. I want to see Kyrie Irving prove that he can stay healthy for 25 games, 35 games, 40 games. And once he does that, then I would feel much more comfortable trading away a Terry Rozier. But right now, why would you do it? What are you going to get for Terry Rozier right now that's going to change the dynamic of this team? There are very few players that I would trade Terry Rozier for. And I know it's kind of laughable here, but if you're the Celtics and you look up and down your roster and you look at what your needs are, I feel like they do need a reliable sort of three-point shooter. Not a streaky shooter, not a capable shooter, and not another scorer. I feel like they need a knockdown three-point shooter. And right now there's a fire sale about to take place in Cleveland. So is there a situation where you can package up a guy like Terry Rozier and in return maybe take a draft pick and a guy like Kyle Korver? Pull something like that off, I'm all for it. Because at some point here in this Brad Stevens offense, you're going to need a reliable knockdown three-point shooter to come off the bench. You know, a mini sort of J.J. Redick role, a Ray Allen light, something like that. And I feel like Kyle Korver is going to be wasted in Cleveland for an abysmal basketball team at 38 years old. There is no point in Kyle Korver being there. So stories out of Cleveland this week suggest that Korver and J.R. Smith will be out of Cleveland sooner rather than later. I hope the Celtics are in on a guy like Korver. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll take the rest of your phone calls and wrap this thing up at 617-779-7937.
So you're saying you're not liking the Celtics right now?
I like the Celtics. I'm saying, Kenny, sometimes you're going to have too much talent.
It was Charles Barkley there a couple weeks back at the start of the NBA season, and he took a lot of heat for that comment. A quick little one-liner, but we got a couple of days of sports radio fodder out of it here in Boston, and he took some heat nationally as well because he's been a bit of a Celtics hater. We know that. That's sort of his MO on that NBA on TNT program. He does a great job. He's wildly entertaining, but it's not always easy to take the things that he says seriously. But I think that was a moment where the experience that Charles Barkley has of a lifetime in this game of basketball really shone through. And instead of us recognizing what he was saying and taking it at face value, we all sort of took it in that other vein, you know, that Charles Barkley vein where we said to ourselves, That's just Barkley being a hater. But maybe he's right. Maybe the Celtics team, it's not that they've got too much overall talent on the team. It's that they are playing too much of that talent together at the same time. And I think that's going to be the challenge that this team has to continue to overcome. And I wish that this were back in the 80s when, you know, Kevin McHale was able to thrive in a six-man role, win six-man of the year, and feel no shame in that whatsoever, feel a tremendous amount of pride in being that six-man, and full well knowing that even as a six-man, you know you're finishing these games. That's the most important part of these games. It's not who starts, it's who finishes. There's a reason why that expression is old and has been around for a long time. And I feel like moving one of these guys, whether it's Tatum, Brown, a guy like Gordon Hayward, to the bench, to be that bench leader, that guy that can control the offense off the bench, would really make a big difference on this basketball team. I know Marcus Morris has been outstanding off the bench for this team thus far this season, but let's face it, he is not the type of dynamic scorer that a guy like Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown can be, or a guy like Gordon Hayward. And right now, I know Mannix disagreed with me, but I'm going to harp on this and harp on this and harp on this. For a guy like Gordon Hayward to eventually get back to the guy that the Celtics are paying him to be, it's very simple in my opinion. He needs to continue to play, and he needs to play significant minutes when he's out there and take 16, 18 shots a game and not feel bad about it. Shooting 6, 7, 8 shots a night for Gordon Hayward, that's just going to prolong the amount of time that it takes for him to get back to the level that the Celtics need him at. Because make no mistake about it, if Gordon Hayward does not return to that level that we thought that the Celtics were getting when they signed him to the fourth richest contract in the NBA, then the expectations for this team to get to the NBA Finals and maybe even compete to win the NBA Finals, I feel like those take a major, major hit. And the only way he's going to get there is if he's taking 12, 13, 14, 15 shots a night. And when you look at the box scores over the last 10 games, he's averaging about 7 shot attempts per night. It's simply not enough. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. Room for you guys before we get out of here at 617-779-7937. Let's grab Tim. Tim's in Attleboro. Tim, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, how you doing, Patrick?
Good, Tim. What's on your mind, man?
Yeah, you made some good points. On one thing, like, there's nothing wrong with being a six-man. Kevin McHale, Maxwell. Like you say, my question to you is, if Gordon Hayward stays in the starting five, okay?
Yep.
Which two out of Tatum and Brown mirror him enough on the floor which could they kind of mirror each other? So I'm trying to say that out of Tatum and Brown, whoever doesn't mirror him as much should maybe go to the backup to come on the floor with the sixth man and the backup guys. Plus, we have Tice coming along, and I know we don't have Shane Larkin anymore. Right?
No, Shane Larkin's gone. He's been replaced with a guy named Brad Wanamaker. And okay. If Brad Wanamaker is ever in a competitive game, something's gone horribly wrong for the Celtics.
Really? He's not that good of a shooter?
He's just a capable, you know, steady veteran point guard that's played like 10 years overseas.
Okay, so he's like the 10th, 11th, 12th guy, 13th, whatever.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Yeah, and I think to your point earlier, though, Tim, I think that if you're talking about similar type of players, similar roles, I look at a guy like Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown, I think that they're actually very similar. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Jaylen Brown's sort of game has taken a step back this year while you've got Gordon Hayward out there with him, because they both are the same height. They play virtually the same position. And people don't realize just how freakishly athletic Gordon Hayward actually was and hopes to be again. You know, you look at him, people look at him and they think of him as a pasty white three-point shooter. But that's not the case. That's not how he made his mark in the NBA. He's a freakishly athletic guy who never stops moving without the basketball and can get to the rim at will. That's who he was in Utah.
Oh, okay. That's him in Utah. Where Tatum, I would think, can grab more rebounds than Brown can. So Brown might not like it, but to put to the second team, I think Brown might be like the sixth man and come in with the backup guy that took the rumors that he wanted to leave.
Oh, yeah, Rozier.
And then, you know, and then when the Tice comes back, he could play kind of with the second tier. I mean, I think he picked 11, but I don't know how long it's going to take to get him back. I know he had plantar fasciitis on his foot, which could take a long time. But who do you think should go? Who matches up best with Gordon and Kyrie in the starting five compared to Tatum and Brown? From listening to you, I think you think Tatum does match up best to start the game.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Tim, I appreciate the phone call, but I will say this. I feel like Jason Tatum has to start every game. Jason Tatum has got superstar potential written all over him. I mean, he could be superstar, top five player in the league, perennial all-star for the next 12 years. There's a reason why Kobe Bryant sort of took him under his wing this offseason. Kobe sees greatness in Jason Tatum. And I think it sort of speaks to the potential of these guys. On one hand, you had Kobe working with Jason Tatum. On the other hand, you had Tracy McGrady working with Jaylen Brown. So these two Hall of Fame players, two of the greatest offensive players of our generation in Kobe Bryant and Tracy McGrady, saw enough in these young Celtics to want to work with them in the offseason. So I know that it hasn't been an ideal start to the season. I recognize that. But we shouldn't sleep on these guys. Eventually they're going to get it right. I just think that you can get it right a little bit quicker if you take some of that ridiculous depth that you have, some of that ridiculous talent, and spread it out a little bit. It doesn't mean that you're going to finish the season on the bench if you move there right now. But if you're able to take some of that bench role, take that pressure off of guys that are currently on the bench right now, because this is an abysmally ranked bench offense. It's 28th in the league right now. They're having a tremendous amount of trouble consistently scoring the basketball off the bench. So why not solve two problems with one move? You take Gordon Hayward, move him to the bench. The bench is that much more talented, and Gordon Hayward has that many more opportunities. If you want to make that move with Jaylen Brown, you can do the same exact thing, and I think have the same results while freeing up more shots, more offense for the guys that are remaining in that starting lineup. Brad Stevens has got his hands full. He's had his hands full all season long. He will continue to have his hands full, especially tomorrow night as this Celtics team, they make their way to Utah. No rest for the weary. This game went to overtime tonight. The Celtics, they win the game in overtime after that feverish comeback. And guess what? They're right back at it tomorrow night. A very difficult road game. A very difficult road back-to-back in Utah without Kyrie Irving, who will miss the game. He's got a family memorial, family obligation to go to. Should be an emotional night in Utah. We'll get to talk about it here tomorrow night as I'm back again for late night, 10 to midnight. So we'll talk about the game as it's going on tomorrow night. Gordon Hayward, he will make his return to the Utah Jazz, make his return to the state of Utah. It's going to be an emotionally charged, fun evening of basketball, and we'll talk about it with you guys tomorrow night right here on Sports Radio WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Bye-bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.